From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight. Later on, The Power of Intention with Lynn McTaggart. Classic Coast to Coast show. Here's what's happening. Well, a pig virus is migrating to the United States, and it's threatening the pork prices. The pork prices may be on the rise in the next few months because of a new virus that has migrated to the United States, killing pigs in 15 states at an alarming rate in facilities where it's been reported. Now, they say not to worry. This disease is not harmful to humans. And they say so far, I like the way they say that, there's no evidence that it affects pork products. So there you have that one. It's really, really hot in Death Valley. Egg frying weather, as a matter of fact. Unfortunately, that wasn't exactly the message that the National Park Service in Eastern California had hoped to impart on people. But the weather has been so warm, a park staffer filmed herself cooking an egg with nothing but a skillet and the sun. The video took off on the web. It's already over 170,000 views, and soon enough, visitors to the hot, dry area were imitating the staffer, minus the skillet, leaving a runny, drippy mess all over the place. It got to be such a problem that the park issued a plea on its Facebook page to crack down on the egg-frying frenzy. They're going to go after people like that. Mitch Batras, of course, EarthChangesMedia.com. It's that hot they can fry eggs on a pan on the ground? Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is amazing. But to many people's surprise, this is not the first time that it's happened. In most cases, it's not even a record. It might be a current record, meaning within the last 100 or 120 years. But the Earth has seen it many times before, and we are definitely in a heat cycle, warming cycle. The sun has been active. It's just not solar flares, just not coronal mass ejections. We often forget about coronal holes and filament eruptions, and that's exactly what's been happening. So you couple that with a weakening magnetic field, and this is what we get.
What's going on with the other weather patterns, Mitch?
Well, it's been kind of unusual. Not so much when you look at it in a grander scale. Up in the northern hemisphere, especially in the continent over around China, they've really been struggling. We're experiencing that too, and many would tell you that it's been a little too quiet related to earthquakes and volcanoes. When that happens, the pressure builds up, and more than likely we will experience some very significant events within the next, I'd say, in the next 60 days.
Super. By the way, Mitch, I call on you almost every week to give us some updates on weather conditions and patterns that help so many listeners and people. And I've been told that you are suffering some medical issues, and I want to make sure you're okay. What's going on with you?
Well, yeah. Well, thank you, George. It's I have some pretty severe back problems. I didn't realize how bad it had got. Finally, my wife forced me to go. I mean, she just would not let me go any longer. I was just suffering every day. So right now, I've had my second spinal tap injection with cortisone. The first round was to see if it was my joints, and after the injections, it lasted one day. In the second round, 3 weeks later, they gave me a different type that addressed more about the nerves. That worked better. That lasted about 2 weeks. And the doctor tells me, well, there's good news and bad news. Good news is that it seems to have worked for a little while. Bad news is that it's the nerves. Maybe it's the nerves, not the joints. So if something doesn't happen in the next in this next round, which will be August 2nd, then we're looking at some surgery.
Oh boy, are you in constant pain right now?
Yes, I am. I spend my time on my back with my legs up, resting on a chair,
doing the interviews.
And I even have the monitor pointed down so I can still do my work.
Oh,
I have such a passion for what I do, is just nothing's going to stop me.
Well, whatever help we can do for you, Mitch, let me know. Mitch's website, earthchangesmedia.com. I go up there quite regularly, take a look at it, and get as much information I can. So you just keep in touch with us, Mitch, and our producers. I don't want to push you too far, but we'll keep our fingers crossed for you. And, of course, we'll throw you on the Friday prayer list. Make sure that helps you out, too. Boston police say that they have linked DNA from a man believed to have been the Boston Strangler to DNA found in the home of a 19-year-old woman who has long been thought to have been his final murder victim nearly 50 years ago. The Strangler is believed to have killed 11 women in the early 1960s, terrifying the entire Boston area for 20 tense months as he hunted women who ranged in age from 19 to 85 years old. The fear that gripped the city was heightened because most of the victims had been sexually assaulted and killed in their homes or residence. Some women are said to have moved away from the city just out of fear. Now, the authorities have announced that they have recently tested samples that had been found at the scene of the murder of Mary Sullivan, who was assaulted and strangled to death back in 1964. And they found a near certain match with Albert DeSalvo. You know, Tony Curtis played the part of Albert DeSalvo in the movie The Boston Strangler. He confessed to the Boston Strangler murders but was never convicted and then recanted a little bit later on. He was stabbed to death at the then Massachusetts Correctional Institution. A number of researchers have always said that he was not the Boston Strangler, that he was just doing it for notoriety, maybe to make some money for his family. However, with these DNA tests, it looks like he may have been. The Boston Marathon bombing suspect Zohar Tsarnaev faced more than two dozen survivors of that attack as he pleaded not guilty to killing four people and wounding more than 200. Tsarnaev is charged with 30 federal counts stemming from that April 15th attack when a pair of bombs went off near the finish line of the packed course. Three people died in those blasts right there, including an 8-year-old little boy. And then a Massachusetts Institute of Technology police officer was killed, you might remember, 3 days later at the start of a dramatic chase that led to Tsarnaev's capture. Senate Democrats failed to restore lowering interest rates on student loans, again coming up short and perhaps signaling that undergraduates might really face rates twice as high as the ones that they had enjoyed last year. Alan Kalinge, of course, is the founder of the studentloanjustice.org, author of The Student Loan Scam. Well, Alan, I guess we kind of figured this would happen, didn't we?
Well, at the rate that Congress has been doing nothing, it's frankly no surprise, George.
No, it's upsetting.
I should probably add, this is all really sort of a tempest in a teapot, given that the implications for the students that are affected, given the rates do stay doubled, are between $9 and $27 per month. Now, that's outlaid over 10 years, so it's a bottom line of about between $1,000 and $3,000 over the decade. But, you know, this pales in comparison to the fact that the average undergraduate leaves school nowadays with about $28,000 in principal. And so it's not really interest rates that is, you know, causing people to flock to the streets and shake their fists in anger. It's really the sticker price. And this is what I'm hoping to get Congress to turn around and acknowledge and pay attention to and address over the coming, or at least through the end of the current legislative session.
Is there any impending legislation out there now, Alan?
There's nothing that is really more than rearranging deck chairs, as far as I can tell, George. I'm hoping that this current Congress will wake up and introduce some legislation that causes the colleges to lower their prices. I mean, that really is where the rubber meets the road on this. And so in all hopes, we'll have some success. But, you know, as a citizens group, you know, with very little funding and certainly no money to pay off politicians with, it's an open question.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Keep in touch. It's an unbelievable story. The apparent mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, reportedly asked his CIA captors if he could design a vacuum cleaner. The Pakistani-born mechanical engineering graduate made the request during a period of detention in Romania back in 2003. A former CIA official says that he used an online guide to redesign the household appliance. The CIA wanted to make sure that its prisoners stayed sane, so they let him do it. I don't know if you knew it or not, but Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from North Carolina's AT&T State University. Astronomers using NASA's Hubble Space Telescope have deduced that the actual visible light color of a planet orbiting another star 63 light years away is a deep blue dot, much like what Earth would look like, except that the planet's atmosphere is 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, it rains glass, and it howls at 4,500 miles an hour with winds. I don't think we can live there. Up next, Everyday Oracles. What does it all mean? We'll talk about that for a while on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Anne Boleyn or McWade. Let me tell you about Anne. Always has sensed the world is alive, nurturing, filled with guidance and support. Concepts deeply seated in her Native American ancestry. Personal oracles have been playing a major part of Anne's life for almost three decades. They have guided and offered comfort to her. She dealt with the loss of her father, the passing of a close friend, the death of a beloved animal companion as well. We're going to talk with her for a few hours about everyday oracles and what they all mean. Anne, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. Tell me, what are oracles?
Well, you know, oracles go back through all time. You know, we've heard about the Oracle of Zeus, and people have always looked for signs in the clouds and you know, all kinds of signs to help guide us. And so in the broadest term, that would be what an oracle is. What happened is I started to pay attention to the things that were happening to all of us when you don't even have to go out and seek an oracle for guidance. And I found out that we're all getting guidance all the time, and that we're not only getting it, but the universe is designed to respond to our needs. So that's what's really exciting to me in this, that, you know, we're living in a universe that is really designed to respond to our needs. And that's what a personal oracle is. That's the way that we get the message. Let me give you an example. Like, everybody's had this one where you drive, probably, if you drive a car, you're driving in traffic, and all of a sudden you just sense that the person next to you is going to pull over and hit you. So you slow down, and they move over just like you intuited they would. That's a telepathic connection that we have, and that protects us. So that kind of shows us that connection that is consistent through everything.
Well, this connection, Anna, I mean, what causes it? What allows us to tap into this?
Well, you don't even have to. You know, we don't have to tap into it. We just have to recognize when it's coming. And I think that, you know, I love to use one that is something that I think a lot of us would miss, but it's a story about Rhonda. And she was taking her dogs for a walk one day, and she had walked just a little ways from her house, and all of a sudden a hummingbird flew right in front of her face. And all of a sudden she felt danger, and she knew to turn around and head home. And as she headed home, out of the left side of her ear, she started to hear the word danger, danger, danger. And she looked back, and it looked like the hummingbird kind of perched on the tree and was watching her. And she got home, and she went inside, and there was a message on her phone, and it was from a neighbor across the street saying, Rhonda, you need to be careful. There are some mad dogs in the neighborhood that have killed some of our livestock and killed our dog.
Oh, my God.
Now, how, you know, I'm not really sure that if a hummingbird flew in front of my face like that, I would have recognized it, recognized the message. But she did, and she tuned into it. And that's the beauty. The universe sends us these messages in ways that we can interpret them and ways that resonate with us personally.
And you write in the Everyday Oracles, you talk about an old Apache storyteller. And they were tuned into the environment, plants, trees, water. They thought everything was alive the way we are alive. Tell me that story.
Well, you know, this is a quote that I found that is was from some of Joseph Campbell's work, and it is, the actual quote reads, the old Apache storyteller reminds us that the plants, trees, clouds, rocks, fire, water are all alive. that they watch us and see our needs. They see when we have nothing to protect us, and it is then that they reveal themselves and speak to us. And, you know, Native Americans certainly were not alone in that. You know, the Aboriginals, people who lived so closely connected to the earth, just really realized that the universe was speaking to them. We're so overloaded now with everything. You know, our lives are full. We've got a lot of responsibilities. We have a lot of technical things in our life that kind of crowd all that out. But when we can be still, we find out that we are getting some amazing messages that guide us. And they can come in dreams. They come in form of synchronicities. You can think that it's a coincidence. And if you look a little bit deeper, it's what Jung called a synchronicity, which is a coincidence with a purpose.
See, I don't believe in coincidences. And I think that everything has a reason. That, you know, you call it fate, call it whatever you want, but it all just, it's planned.
Well, it might, yeah, and I play it. That's definitely, I agree that there's something out there like an invisible moving sidewalk. I use the term invisible moving sidewalk, and you talk about something being planned. You know, when something happens that, I'll share a story about Dr. Alan Hamilton, who's a neurosurgeon in Tucson at the Arizona Medical Center. He was leaving his house one morning to go do brain surgery, and as he was driving in, he noticed a rabbit alongside the road that was dead, and there were all these buzzards that were picking at its carcass.
Yeah.
And he registered on it, and he gets in to do his surgery, and he gets all cleaned up, and he, you know, goes and tells the man and his wife about the surgery. And as he starts to leave the man alone with his wife, he watches the woman lean over, and she says, "See you later, bunny." And Dr. Hamilton canceled the surgery. And while he would have been in surgery, the man had a heart attack, a major heart attack, that he did survive, but it would have killed him.
He would have died right there.
Yeah, exactly. And so to me, that I look at that as an invisible moving sidewalk. That's something, like you called it, fate, you know. That's something that was set in motion. And because Dr. Hamilton just knew in his gut that he needed to pay attention to this, then the man is still alive. So there are all kinds of things like that are going on all the time.
How many of us, though, Ann, might not recognize those symbols or those episodes and then react to it? If the doctor, for example, merely looked at the birds, you know, eating away at a dead rabbit,
exactly,
and then, you know, heard his wife call him bunny, and not put two and two together, the guy would have died. So how can some people put it together, or why do they put it together?
Well, and that's what I'm all about, because I'm trying to say, hey, guys, let's pay attention here. You know, there's all kinds of really great things going on, and we're going to miss some of them. And, you know, they won't be that big. They'll be like, you know, one man that's a contributor. He had this, I know we've all missed intuitive hits. You know, he was carrying his glasses on a case on his belt, and he had this, what he thought was a thought that said, you know, that's not very smart, you better move it. And within 5 minutes, his glasses were gone and he could never find them. And those are the kind of things that when we get those kind of messages from, you know, the personal oracle messages that are coming through this interconnected link that is so mysterious, we miss a few of them and we go, wait a minute, maybe I'll pay attention to this one.
How do we know that the oracles aren't like, you know, your personal angel, your guides?
Well, I think we can call them anything we want. You know what I mean? I think that, you know, the guidance that is there for us is coming through animals, through, you know, our personal guides. But what I'm really wanting people to recognize is that everything is all interconnected, and because everything is so interconnected, it's supporting us like this giant web, so that we are living within this wonderful web of support, that when we pay attention, it's really working with us. Another story I'd love to share is about a little boy.
Save that story of the little boy, and we're going to hit this break, and we'll come right back and talk more with you next hour. Of course, we'll take phone calls as well as we talk about everyday oracles. Fascinating how people just react or don't react to episodes right under their noses. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Ann Bollinger McQuaid with us as we talk about oracles. So what's the story of the little boy, Annie?
Okay, well, you know, we were talking about Dr. Hamilton's rabbit and invisible green sidewalk. And so this is another one that is something that was set in action. And we see how this fate was changed by a personal oracle. And what happened is this little boy was about a five-year-old, and he was having the worst nightmare, and he woke up screaming, "Daddy's dead, Daddy's dead, Daddy's dead," and his parents went and got him, and they took him into bed with him, and they just had a hard time. His dad kept saying, "I'm fine, you know, everything's fine." Well, morning came, and the little guy still just was having a real hard time. So the parents talked, and they decided that the mother would take the other children to school, and the father called his office, and he said, "You know, I'm going to be late for my meeting, my 9 o'clock meeting, but I'll be there as soon as I can." So he takes the little guy to nursery school, and he's, you know, talks to the teacher, gets the little boy settled, and he walks out to his car, and he sees his cell phone, had a message, and he picked it up, and it's his wife, and she's just frantic, and she's going, "Don't go into the city, don't go into the city." And it was 9/11. And his dad was supposed to be at a meeting in the Twin Towers.
Unbelievable.
Now, this is what, you know, this is when we don't have to even, you know, these parents didn't realize what was going on. You know, all they did was do the right thing for their child.
There's a friend of mine that passed away in St. Louis. He was running a pretty substantial company in here. And he also, as a hobby, drove cars in NASCAR, you know, race cars. And he was down in Florida. And he was doing some practice runs and things like that. But prior to going down there, his little boy, after having a dream, just kept saying, "Daddy, don't go. Daddy, don't go." He kept telling him that. And of course, he went, and he flipped his car, and he died.
Oh, my gosh, that's the exact opposite.
Yeah, the roll bar broke in the car, and it crushed him. But the little boy must have sensed something.
Well, yes, and or, you know, that's the way that the universe speaks to us. You know what I mean? And you know, whether the little boy saw the accident per se, but something was, that's the exciting thing to me when we look at the horrific thing that happened to the father of the little boy that, you know, went ahead and went. But when we recognize that the universe really is trying to support us, I think it, when we really grasp it, and I've studied it for so long, and I've collected so many stories of so many different people, and this is, things are happening to help us along the way in so many different ways. The world just changes hue for us, you know, and you realize, well, you know, we're really being helped.
Well, that's but the important thing is what you've just said. You have to be able to recognize it in order to react to it. I mean, how many times have all of us, and we'll find out when we take calls next hour, but how many times have we had these feelings, these signs, and we still go ahead and act not on it, but we do what we're going to do, and you know what? We end up getting screwed up. Something happens.
Well, I think you're 100% right, and I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, and you know, one of the things that people that are just really getting into this go, well, people think I'm crazy. You know, if I tell them that, you know, this bird, like we'll use a hummingbird as an example, that this bird came and I realized the bird was telling me to turn around and go back home, and then we just have to look at the parameters of what is conventional reality and realize that how that can really hamper us.
Let's talk about Isaac Newton, because you say something that he had a personal oracle.
Well, I just like to use him and say, you know, that apple that fell off of the tree, that he, mm-hmm. The story goes that the apple fell from the tree. He looked at it and went, "Wait, what's going on there?" And that's how he began to, one of the things that helped him realize what gravity was. And so I just do that to play, because that's like when we notice things like that, you know, it's out there, the universe is out there showing itself to us. And, you know, Isaac Newton also is a very spiritual man. And the more I studied him, the more I realized that, you know, he was into astrology and astronomy and all kinds of other things. So he was looking at things through all the multifaceted possibilities. So, yeah, I like to look at him because he's somebody that we can look at and go, well, you know, he got a pretty important personal oracle that made him realize and quantify gravity.
Are you convinced that there's a higher power out there that makes these things happen?
That's an interesting way to put it. And I will say, yes, I'm convinced that the universe is designed with a higher power or by a higher power that does this. But if you're asking me, do I believe that everything is, that we're puppets, or, you know, that things are being controlled that way? I think what it is that the universe is designed to support us. Everything is alive, so it's all, and it's so complex and so beautiful that it's all interacting with each other for the highest good.
Well, I agree with that, but I mean, are we allowing it to interact with ourselves? Are we manifesting it? Or, you know, do we have that godlike figure, whatever it may be, doing it for us?
Well, I think that some people do, and I think that, but I do believe in God, but I do believe that God or the divine source or whatever name, whatever culture wants to put on this creative force that we're going to call God right now, I believe that God set this up to work on its own.
Well, maybe so.
But no, that's just my own look. I'm just telling you how I feel.
I want to get into the science behind this, and if there is one, but I do want to hear the story about the soldier's dog. Tell me about that story.
Well, you know, I was watching television, and I just saw it was on ABC, and it was on, oh, I think it was on the 2020. And they had gone, Kimberly Lahner, a journalist, had gone out to interview this mother and father who had a son who had been in Afghanistan. And he and his buddies had one night had adopted a bunch of little puppies, and the next morning their son was killed. So he had spent the night with this puppy, and they knew that the puppy had a real connection to him. So some way or other, they worked so that they could get this puppy, and they had the puppy at their house. So Kimberly Lahner goes out to interview these people, and this picture is in my book because ABC has been kind enough to let me publish it in the book. But, and it is actually on Kimberly Lahner's Facebook page. Anybody that wants to go run, look at it right now. But she's talking to them, and all of a sudden, they see this light that just shines, that this beautiful, it's more than a ray of light. It's very intricate when you look at it. And there's all these very active rays of light showering this dog. And as I remember, she was just said they were all jumping around. They had no doubt that they each probably interpreted it a different way, but they had no doubt that was their son.
See, how does that happen?
Well, because I believe that the spirits, in my book, in the very first page, almost in the last page, my father, when my father died, the morning after he died, I was making the arrangements for him to his body to be returned to Kansas, and I just had this urge to go out and see something to my husband. And as I walked through the garage, I could feel my dad, and then I looked up above my husband, who was washing the car, and there was a profile in a cloud. Now, my dad, we always looked at clouds. We always saw, my dad saw images in everything. So I say to my husband, Kenneth, look, it's my dad. And he looks up and he goes, wow, he's even got his beard.
I love it.
So flash forward 10 years, flash to the end of the book, and there is an image in the last page of the book. And I was walking, we have a labyrinth at our home, and I was walking the labyrinth with a woman who was a labyrinth guide. And there is this song that a group that I know, we sing when we do labyrinths, and it's like, I walk the path of the mystery, and as I walk, it's revealed to me the truth, the deep, the way, and there are more verses, which I won't do, but I could feel my dad. And I And I, excuse me, so I had my camera with me, and I thought, I'll take a picture. And I could tell right where he was, and I took a picture, and you'll see that picture. Actually, it's on my website as well. You'll see a picture of my dad in real life, and his image in the clouds 10 years later is like a hologram. It's amazing.
Is there a science behind any of this?
The science that I kind of refer to is when you look at the quantum universe, and you look at the holographic universe, and you look at the string theory, and you put all of these things together, and you and then you put Confucius' quote back in 500, where he says, "My way is crossed by a single thread that connects everything." You see that there is that structure that I was also talking about. There's a big net, you know, like a big net that we're all interconnected. The energy is running through all of us, and it's connecting us all. And when we pay attention, we are geared to really support each other automatically.
These oracles, can we be trained to create them, to let them influence our lives? Can we manifest them ourselves, and how do we do that?
Well, sure. I think the first thing is, you know, what I would do if I were starting out is, if I were somebody who's listening to me, I would see if anything's popped into my mind as we were talking, a personal experience, and I would write it down. And if not, then I would see when something happened, like a coincidence, you know. I'll share something really quickly. A story in the book is about a woman who was driving along. She was going way too fast, and she saw a license plate next to her, and it said GVT, and she slowed down and thought, wait, what does that mean, government alert? And she slowed down just enough. She glanced up, and she had just gone past a traffic camera that would have taken a picture and given her a ticket. Now, I think that's hilarious. Look at the irony in that. But things like this happen. When things like this happen, don't let them go by you. Write them down. And then start to create your own body of evidence, so to speak. You know, and you can, yeah, you can get a journal. I always like to talk about a sticker note shoebox method. If you don't want to write in a journal, or you could put it on your computer, on your iPhone, make notes, but someplace write it down. You will be stunned at the number of times that something tells you to do something or don't do it. And if you follow it, you see what happens. And if you don't, you see what happens. And you'll be your own teacher.
Tell me a little bit about these five major categories of these personal oracles you write about.
Okay, well, what I did really just to try to make it easier for all of us is I watched how things happen. And so I had broken it down into conduits.
Okay, mirrors. back off your phone just a little bit, by the way.
How about now?
Well, I don't know. You're not talking.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'll keep talking. Am I at the right level?
Yeah, you were just, you know, popping your peas a lot. You're too close.
Okay. The five categories are conduits, mirrors, synchronicities, signs and symbols, and invisible moving sidewalks. So we've talked about invisible moving sidewalks, so things that appear to be set in action, and I call it an invisible moving sidewalk because you step on it a lot of times without even knowing it, and then it takes you to a destination. And you can watch, like the bunny, Dr. Hamilton's bunny, that, you know, you watch all those things happen as they do. Signs and symbols, that could be like there's rocks that are shaped in certain ways. That might be a sign that only you would interpret that way. Like here in Taos, there is a boulder that looks like a turtle. And every time I see that, it sits way up high. I'm not sure anybody else even sees it. Looks just like a giant turtle. It reminds me of the tortoise and the hare, and it makes me think, slow down. You can, yeah. There's all kinds of things hidden like that for all of us all the time that will really only speak to us. So that would be a sign, you know, that we pick up. It could be a cloud in the sky, you know. sometimes I'll see a laughing cloud or the shape of a cloud that the mouth looks like it's laughing. And that happens to me when I need to lighten up.
You ever get in a car, you're behind somebody who's going unbelievably slow, and so you figure, all right, you know, I'm not going to tailgate the person. I'm just going to pull over and pass them up and get to where I'm going. So you do that, and you zoom past them, and then sure enough, you get stuck at a light or something, and there they come, and they end up being right behind you anyway. You can't win. Did that ever happen to you?
Oh, I think that happens to all of us who drive.
Yeah. I think so, too. I mean, you speed away, but you get stopped, and then they show up because, you know.
Yeah, and you really didn't make any kind of progress.
You made no progress at all. If anything, you probably put yourself in harm's way.
Yeah, something like that.
Are oracles paranormal?
Well, you know, I think that when we start talking about, you know, spirits that are, you know, close by and are communicating with us to let us know that they're still around, some people might call that paranormal. Or some of the messages that people get on the radio, songs on the radio that have strong significance, that might seem paranormal. To me, it's just the way of the universe. It's just, you know, part of, we might call it paranormal, but it's just part of a reality that we haven't embraced yet.
Interesting take on all of this. Give us your website, Ann, and your book, Everyday Oracles. Where do you get it?
You can get it on my website. It's at www.personaloracles.com. You can get it at hopefully any of your bookstores. It's available in book form in iBook, and they also have it coming out today in audio.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I think more books should come out in audio, don't you?
Yes, and this is good because there are pictures, so that, you know, when there are pictures in the book, but when you put them on a computer or you put them in an iBook, you're lighted kind of from behind, gives you a whole other resolution. Also, I've got a YouTube video up now, and if your people want to go on YouTube and look for Everyday Oracles, the man who designed it, it's the images, some of the images we've been talking about, and some we haven't talked about, and they are, it'll make you realize that life can be pretty good when we pay attention.
Padre Pio, known for having the stigmata, you know, the bleeding wound marks that Jesus had, you had some experience with him? Tell me about it.
Well, what happened was my husband and I were on a cruise, and you know how when you're on a cruise, you stop at all these different ports, and we were stopping in Rome, and the day that we were going to be in Rome, the Pope John Paul was going to do a mass there. I'm not Catholic, so watch me fumble with words, but he was doing a mass, and I just really respected him, Pope John Paul, and I wanted to go. So we get there, and it was back in 99, so they were doing all of the remodeling for the year 2000, and it was also a lot of terrorist activity in the area. So they were scanning everybody, and everybody was a little bit nervous because you were told don't go to big gatherings.
Right.
But we went. So we're there, and I'm sitting there waiting, and I don't, of course, speak Latin, and I don't know much about Catholicism. I just knew that I wanted to be there, and all of a sudden I felt very protected, and I looked up, and I saw this cloud that had this amazing face in it. So I took photographs, and I ended up...
It was Padre Pio's face, wasn't it?
His face.
Yep, I knew it. We're going to come back. We're going to take stories and questions next on Coast to Coast AM.